Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode is with Ben Bruce of Asking Alexandria, and it's a wonderful chat. Really kind of interesting backstory. Like Ben, born in the UK, grew up in Dubai at a time when maybe Dubai wasn't the Dubai that we see on social media now. It sounded like a very different place. Finding out how Ben kind of found his tribe and discovered rock and metal. And then we done the call from his home in America, so he relocates to the States. So we've got a really interesting chat. And fundamentally, at the very essence of it, he's a really nice guy that's got ace taste in music. So you're in for a treat. Before we get on with that chat, just a few thank yous. Thanks to Screw Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network, which this podcast is very proud to be part of. Go explore the Distraction Pieces Network because there's some ace podcasts on there. Big thanks to 76 for producing this podcast. Thanks to you lot for continuing to support this. Thanks for thanks to Ben for not Ben Bruce, Ben Gazy for putting this together. Big shout out to you. Thank you. And also, if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, then when you get to the end of today's Ace Chat with Ben Bruce, go and explore the back catalogue. Because if you like hearing me talking to rockers, then you can hear me talking to Tommy Lee of I nearly said Foo Fighters then, Tommy Lee of Motley Crue. You can hear me speaking to Foo Fighters. You can hear me talking to Ral Reynolds of Enter Shikari, Jesse Leach of Killswitch Engage, Mastodon. Oh, God, who else have I spoken to in the world of rock and metal? There's a stack. And if you like your comedy, then I've spoken to some amazing comedians, some great producers. We talk about Nirvana. They you know, most podcasts, that word pops up, Nirvana. I was blessed to sit down and have an amazing chat with Butch Vig, discussing, obviously, producing, you know, that iconic record for Nirvana. And so, yeah, go and explore the back catalogue. There's 350 episodes, and you can listen to them all for free. So go and get stuck in. Before we get on with the chat, just also, if you get a chance, when you finish listening to this, give us a little like. Or if you see us on the socials, if you're not following me on the socials, go and search Off the Beat and Track. Give us a follow. And then a like, a love, a share, a retweet, all the usual stuff. Because it really helps in getting the word out about this podcast. So any help like that would be amazing. If the 350 episodes isn't enough for you and you want more and you want more regular content, then why not head over to Patreon? Over there, I have an account where you can support it from as little as 79p a month. And with that, you get access to video episodes of so many of these chats. You get standalone episodes, radio shows, and an archive to get stuck into of about 300 shows over there as well. And like I say, 79p a month. All of this, everything you need to know about this podcast, check it out at www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. It's not beaten, beatandtrackpodcast.com. Let's get on with today's natter. Please enjoy this wonderful chat with Ben Bruce of Asking Alexandria. Sorry, I've interrupted the podcast, but with good reason. Hotel Chocolat are our sponsors. You know that now because I tell you about it every episode. But they've been super kind now. And you may have heard me talking about the products from the cacao bar. And there's gins, cream liqueurs, all sorts of wonderful chocolatey goodies. And what they've done is they've set a page up on the website that you can go to. And all you've got to do is just for you Off the Beaten Track listeners, go over there, answer a question, and you could win the full range delivered to your front door. I mean, that's kind of them. All you have to do is go to this place, hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. That's OTBT as in Off the Beaten Track podcast. hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. Go get your grubby little mitts on some deliciously chocolatey drinks, courtesy of our sponsors, Hotel Chocolat. I'll get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we're recording. Ben Bruce, how are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. Just starting my day. I feel like I live in the States, but it feels a bit homely right now. It's pissing it down with rain outside, so it feels good. It feels like I'm in England.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm just outside London. We've got some glorious sunshine, mate.
Bastard.
Whereabouts are you in the States?
I'm in Charleston, which is in South Carolina. It's about... I left home when I was 16, so I've found myself in my older age getting really homesick. So Charleston was actually founded by the Brits. It used to be called Charlestown after King Charles. But there's like roads here and everything that are built from cobblestones that they brought over on the boats from England. It was here being built on before it was even America. So this is about as close to being in England as I can get without actually being in England.
And you get the rain as well. So, you're almost here, mate. You're almost here.
Almost.
So where are you at in regards to where's Charleston in regards to post-lockdown? Or are you still in lockdown? What's the situation like where you are right now?
There's really been no lockdown. This is America, dude. This is the Wild West. they're like, hey, man, go out, get sick if you want. Which has been nice that I've been able to still go out and enjoy outdoors and stuff. But also, it's a little bit worrying. I've got three kids, and my wife's pregnant. So it's like, it's scary going out, but they're not able to be vaccinated or anything right now. But at the same time, I feel like, I've spoken to friends and stuff in Australia and that have been in crazy lockdown, and even in England not that long ago. And I think I can't imagine my kids would have gone nuts. They go nuts if they're home for the weekend because it's raining. Yeah. So I mean, I've been fortunate in that regard. And where we live too in Charleston, we're on the beach, so we can go and still be away from people, but still be outdoors and do stuff.
Lovely. Well. Yeah. Ben, I'm going to start the playlist. And so for track one, I'd like you to tell me, please, the song that you think has the greatest ever intro.
I personally, it's so subjective, isn't it? Because it just depends. But for me, I think I picked Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. I don't even know that I need to explain why. I just, I think those a cappella vocals, those harmonies coming in, it's almost like a sneaky way that they started the song, because obviously everyone knows what it sounds like now. But can you imagine hearing that for the first time? Those vocals come in kind of haunting, kind of low laying. You have no idea what the rest of that roller coaster looks like the first time this has been presented to the world. So it kind of is, I just think it's genius. It's amazing how that song starts and then builds into what it is, from something so simple, so stripped down, to something, one of the biggest sounding songs of all times. Genius.
Absolutely. And the thing that, always sort of stuns me when this song does get mentioned quite regularly when people talk intros, and rightly so. It's a masterpiece of a single. And I always like to ask guests about songwriting and the changes in ways that young people listen to music, and we'll get round to that in a sec. But for me, I think that must have blown minds then in record companies.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't necessarily look at that and go, yep, that's a single. because it's an album in a single.
I don't think people did. I think when they handed it in, as I wasn't in the room, but from what I've read, the label was like, what is this? Like, this is insane. And I feel like if we handed something in like that now, labels would have the same response. Like, what are you doing? Maybe even more so now. It's way longer than 2 minutes and 30 seconds, that song. I mean, can you imagine just hearing that for the first time? Someone heard that outside of the camp for the first time ever. I would love to have seen just their face listening to it.
There should be some YouTube reaction videos to playing young kids Bohemian Rhapsody and seeing what their first response is.
They wouldn't make it through. 2 minutes in, they'd be like, next.
Well, that's kind of vital in the question I'm going to ask you now. And in the way that music's listened to now and consumed by so many youngsters, and I often use my children as an example here. I watch their thumbs and they're rapid, and I've grown up in a very kind of traditional way of listening to music, and I grew up buying vinyl and, you know, playing one side, flipping it, playing the other side, etc. And I was no stranger to hearing Bohemian Rhapsody and these songs that have these humongous, dramatic introductions and you know, go all over the place. And even, like, looking at sort of hard rock and metal, like, you're seeing, for me, the influence, and I'm going to use bands like maybe Bring Me the Horizon and things like that that have definitely been pushed or happily moved into the realms of pop influence, and you're seeing the structures of them songs maybe sort of definitely leaning towards, I'm not suggesting it's the artists that are pushing for that, but it feels that, like, they're now existing in a realm where they wouldn't be out of place on TikTok. They wouldn't get, you know, the thumb wouldn't swipe it quickly. It's definitely leaning towards entertaining their minds that are coming through. And I'm trying to say that with the greatest respect, because I really like that band as well. And so with that in mind, I'm going right the way around the answers with this question here, Ben, but with that in mind, when you sit and write records, are any of these things considerations when you're sitting there with a guitar, no distractions, writing a song? Does that filter through?
Now on this new album, absolutely not. The exact opposite. But previously, I think so, yeah, because when you know, Bring Me the Horizon started at a young age too. They're a great example. And so did we. You know, they were a few years before us. But, you know, you do, when you're coming up and there's labels and everyone behind you going, you need to do this, you need to do this, this is what's selling now, this is what's selling now, you're kind of guided. And again, I'm not saying that they don't want to sound like that. I mean, I'm sure they do. And they're really, really fucking good at it. But somewhere along the way, bands are guided. They just are. It's what it is. There's record labels that need to make their money. And what becomes popular and big at the time, I mean, it's a tale as old as time. Look at what happened with 80s hair metal. It got big, so everyone was an 80s hair metal band. Pantera started as an 80s hair metal band. So, it's definitely a thing, and it's very easy to go, okay, well, what's happening right now? What do we need to do to still be relevant and successful? But it just, for us, for I'm sat here wearing a Def Leppard t-shirt. I grew up listening to blues music like B.B. King, Eric Clapton, or rock music like Dire Straits and the Scorpions and Metallica and Pantera. It felt disingenuous to myself. And at the time when I was writing, like, our previous record, like House on Fire, I'll still listen to it and think, these songs are sick. They're great. But I struggle to sit and listen to my influences in it. I can't pick out anything by Brian May or Dimebag Darrell. I can't hear anything by Elton John in there or the Beatles. And it kind of just makes me go, huh. And this time off that we've had due to the pandemic allowed me to sit down and reflect on that and go, whoa, and, like, kind of shake myself out of it and go, like, this isn't why I started this band. These are the artists I love. And it is, you know, your bands like Pantera and Metallica and Nirvana and Dire Straits and the Beatles and Elton John and the Stones, all these classic rock and metal bands that I just love. And so with this record, that was the goal. It was, I don't care what playlists require me to play. I don't care what radio says I need to sound like. I don't care what we sounded like in the past. What I care about is creating something super meaningful to me where I can sit back and listen to it and hear my influences and love of music shine. And thankfully for us, our record label, they felt exactly the same way. Alan Kovac, the guy that owns our record label, he said, don't pigeon yourselves. He was encouraging me to listen to and be influenced by bands like Zeppelin and Elton John. And it was really refreshing, and it was so enjoyable. And I think I can sit back and listen to this new album and go, oh yeah, I hear me in there through my influences.
Excellent. Track two, the first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please, Ben.
It was Fur Elise by Beethoven. I never met Beethoven myself, so he wasn't playing it for me. But it was my grandma. She used to just sit and play at her piano. And I just vividly remember just sitting there in their living room. I would just watch her play. And she would always start with Fur Elise. And, you know, I'm sure she went on to play multiple other songs whilst I was sat there watching her. But that's the one that always just do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. So, echoes in my brain when I think of music and the first thing that I fell in love with. And over the years, as she got older, she got arthritis in her fingers and she couldn't quite play piano like she once could, but somehow she always maintained the ability to play Fur Elise, almost like her body just did it without her even realizing. So that song for me, even when I hear it now, just immediately I'm taken back into my grandparents' old house about 2 feet tall, you know. It's a special song.
And if you had to sort of name it, what would the emotion have been?
Oh man, I you know what? I think just sheer happiness or joy. I think I was so young, you don't really realize what life has in store for you. You've not been tainted yet. You've not been ruined. So nothing else mattered to me, you know, like that was playing and it was like, vroom. I was in a bubble of just happiness and love. I mean, you think back to when you're a kid and you're at your grandparents' house, it's joy, isn't it? It's Absolutely. Joy before it's been sucked from you.
So grandparents, piano in the house, parents, was there records on at home growing up? Was you always surrounded by music?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think on my mum's side, even there's a brass band conductor. I think he was from Crewe. That's where my mum's family's from originally, called Harry Mortimer. And he was a very famous brass band conductor. We've got his OBE that he was awarded by the Queen of England for his work in the music industry in the UK. So I think it's always been in my blood. And because of that, my grandma was always super proud of that. And she'd be like, oh, your great uncle, Harry Mortimer, who was her uncle. And so I was just introduced to music at such a young age. And then on my dad's side of the family, we don't know much about his family. He was actually, it's like a movie. He was left on a doorstep in a basket when he was a baby. But because of that, I think he always felt like a bit of a black sheep and an outsider. The people that raised him, who were my grandparents, amazing. You know, they loved him to no end. They kept him. But because he always felt a little bit lost and confused, I think he was one of the only little white kids in England in that era listening to blues music. He grew up listening to incredible artists like B.B. King and stuff and so, and Muddy Waters. So my dad introduced me to blues from a very young age. And so I think just from both sides of my family. And then when my stepdad came into the equation, he introduced me to the rock side. He was all about Scorpions and Dire Straits and Deep Purple. So I was just bombarded from all sides of music and the great spectrum that it encompasses from all of my family at a very, very young age.
And you draw from all of that, right? You draw from all of that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, and I love it. You know, and if you like, again, I go back to this new album that's coming out. But you know, if you listen to the end of "Find Myself," for instance, you can hear my classical inspirations and influences from the Beethoven and Mozart stuff. There's a beautiful piece of classical music at the end of that, that we hired a real string quintet to play, And then, you know, if you listen throughout the record, you're going to hear bits of blues sprinkled there. You're going to hear Gary Moore playing the guitar. I love music. And for me, it would be such a shame and such a travesty to just pigeonhole myself into just strictly performing one and not using all those influences. And the funny thing to me is I hear people say all the time, like, I don't like blues, or I don't like country music, I like rock music. And I'm like, well, have you sat down and listened to blues, country and rock all together? They're very fucking similar, you know.
Yeah.
Slightly different accent with the singer, slightly different way of presenting it, but it's the same stuff.
Fundamentals are the same, right?
Yeah, you know, and I feel like if you can enjoy one, you can definitely enjoy the other. You just need to allow yourself to.
Absolutely. Listen up.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I've only got another new sponsor, Eggfried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, E-G-G-S-A-L-A-D, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Eggfried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. For track three, I'm going to ask you to tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
Yeah, that was probably the hardest one I got asked, because when I think to my school days, I mean, it depends what year I'm talking. You know, there's so many songs that take me back there. It could be Prison Song by System of a Down or Left Behind by Slipknot on 1 year, and then Blink-182's Rock Show another year. But I think when you ask the question, what one song takes me back to my school days, the same band always pops up, and it's Metallica. It instantly. And I think for me, it has to be Nothing Else Matters, because I think at that particular time in my life, I was just being introduced to Metallica. And obviously, I was listening to bands like Slipknot and System of a Down, and there was a big new metal period during my childhood. So when I was listening to the earlier bands, I still tended to sort of lean towards the heavier side of things, like listening to Cowboys from Hell and stuff like that, or on Metallica's records, like their older sort of Master of Puppets. And when I put the Black Album on, I fell in love with it, but Nothing Else Matters just... it was so different to anything I was listening to at that period of my life. It was so melodic and so beautiful and so just stripped back. I was taken aback by it. And So much so that I remember asking for my birthday that year. I asked my dad to buy me an Ovation acoustic guitar because I saw James Hetfield playing one on the S&M DVD that they did. And I felt like I needed to play that song and it needed to be on an Ovation guitar. And it just left a huge impact on me from the get-go. And it allowed me to sort of open my mind and listen to more melodic stuff, which I think is when I really started doing deep dives into bands like the Scorpions and stuff like that, and really appreciate those lesser grandiose heavy songs that really I didn't realize up until that moment that all these big heavy hitters in heavy metal, they wrote the best ballads and they wrote the best like soppy soft songs, which I didn't realize as a kid.
What I'm always interested as to understanding how people find their tribe, and how I've run an alternative venue nightclub for nearly 30 years, and I've seen so many different trends and youth cultures come and go, and what's interesting is that as so much of these youth cultures seem to blur now. You know, and I use blur, no pun intended there, but blur, the Britpop thing in the mid-90s had a very iconic imagery. You know, everybody was dressing like Liam and Noel and Damon Albarn and such. And then, you know, a few years before that, everybody was dressing like Kurt and Eddie Vedder. And yeah. And then after that, nu metal drops and all of a sudden everybody's, you know, wearing that kind of stuff and so on and so on. And one of the things that I find really interesting now is when I look at the people that come through the doors of my venue, there's quite a, and I use the word generic with respect, it's quite a generic fashion that you could walk into any club, any yeah. pub, and you wouldn't necessarily go, bang, that guy loves Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. Like, it wouldn't happen. It's quite safe. The only youth culture that still wears its colours on its sleeve, metalers. Like, you can still go, there's a metaler.
There's a metaler,
And it's so weird that all of these other youth cultures, you know, like, have all just, like, you know, hip-hop, like, imagery has changed so much. And all of these youth cultures that had such stark imagery has all kind of sort of moved into, like, this kind of Topshop window.
Yeah,
but metalers are metalers, and they still wear their stripes.
I think a lot of it's down to social media. I think everyone's been consumed by social media, and everyone is being force fed and through this tiny little screen everyone else's picture perfect life, which is bullshit. Of course, no, everyone, if you go on Instagram, lives on a fucking beach in Maui and owns a fucking yacht. It's not realistic, but that's what's being force fed to you. That's what you should strive for. That's what you should be. That's who you should be. And so I think with that, people are trying to dress that way. They're trying to look that way. They're trying to be that person because I feel like that's what they're told they should be. I mean, if you even look at what's on television now, go look at shows that are so huge now, like Love Island. They all look exactly the same. Yeah. I went in to get my hair cut a few weeks ago. And it was still long. Where I live, it's humid, it's hot. But I still want long hair. I love headbanging. I need my long hair. I asked her to keep it long on top and take it down, keep it long in the back and go down into a point. It's kind of like a fat mohawk. I don't even know what it's called. And keep the sides short. And she went, oh, no, you don't want that. And I went, well, yeah, I do. That's why I asked for it. She goes, no, trust me. This is what everyone has now. And she went, and she just, and I was like, whoa, what have you done? But she was like, well, that's how everyone has their hair now. And that's exactly what you're saying. Yeah. Everyone that goes into the hairdressers asks for the same haircut now. Yeah. You know, there's no one sporting a big pink mohawk anymore. There's no one sporting a perm. You know, everyone's got the same thing and they all look like Instagram.
Yeah. Your hair looks cool, Ben. Like, it looks good, man. But I know what you're saying. I mean, I remember my mate's a tattooist, and he was saying, like, it must be about 10 years ago, he said people would come into my studio with a photo of David Beckham's arm and go, I want that sleeve.
I want Yeah.
I mean, that's fucking that. Tragic, man.
Yeah, I remember that. Because that's the thing, too. Tattoos became less of something that represents who you are, less of self-expression and more a fashion statement. So again, people looking at David Beckham's like the sex icon of the world. He's talented. He's good looking. Everyone wants to be David Beckham. So they go, oh, well, I could be David Beckham. I just need to look like him.
Yeah.
Do me, you know? And it's like, color me in the same as him. And I remember when I was younger, I got my first tattoo and I was like, I think I was like 15. It was because I loved them, and every tattoo I've got on my body, bar a few stupid ones that I've let mates do in a drunken stupor, my tattoos all mean something very specific to me. Like I've got my grandfather's eye tattooed to the back of my neck, surrounded by his favorite plants. I've got imagery. My arms are the imagery that the lyrics from the first two songs that got Asking Alexandria signed are. So everything means something. I've got family first across my chest, and I got these big swallows that represent, no matter how far away from home I fly every year, I'll follow them home and I go home. You know, there's everything means something. But now everyone's covered in tattoos, which when I was younger, my grandparents were like, never going to get a job if you get tattoos. Like it was a big no-no. Even my mom, who loves tattoos, was like, please don't get your hands or your neck done. And I came home when I was like 19. It's like, and she was like, oh, but now everyone's covered in them. So you don't even bat an eyelid, but yeah. They're just a fashion statement now. And I often wonder what people are going to feel like. Like now I'm 32, turning 33. And I often forget I have tattoos now. They've been here so long. But when people do ask and I take note, I go, oh, would I get them again? Fuck no, they hurt. They hurt too much. I'm too much of a pussy now. But I can tell you what they all mean to me, and I can tell you what they represent. And so at least I've got that. And I often think, what are people going to say about their tattoos when they get older? Like that. Yeah, well, David Beckham had these ones. Oh, well.
Yeah, that's no story, man.
Do you know what I mean? Oh, okay.
We've kind of digressed from where I was going to try and sort of angle the chat, but
I'm good at that.
No, all it was, I wanted to kind of, you know, tell me about when you kind of, you know, because most kids aren't infant school listening to, you know, Slipknot. It's generally in those sort of formative years that you start to kind of find your tribe and you find your identity a little bit, and it starts to form then. Can you remember like any sort of pivotal moments in that at school when it was just like somebody went, oh, listen to this, or have you seen this, and like some shows you a front cover of Kerrang or whatever and it's just like, fuck, look at that.
I remember it, the moment specifically, because again, growing up in Dubai, there was a lot of expats, and a lot of British expats. So everyone would come over.
Sorry, Ben, just to throw it probably off another tangent again. How come she was in Dubai? How did that come about?
So I'm from Wandsworth, South London, originally. And when I was born, we lived in on a little street called Love Lane in Wandsworth. And my dad didn't have much money. And I think when I was super young, I was four when we left. My sister was born 3 years after me. So she was about one. My dad got made redundant. But all he had to his name was a bicycle that he kept in the summer shed at the end of the yard. And so he had his bike and he used to cycle into London every day and try and get a job. And apparently one day we woke up and his bike had been stolen from the garden shed, from the summer shed at the end. And he was like, I can't live here anymore. I can't provide for my kids and my wife. And he was in advertising. He was a copywriter at the time, and he got offered a position at a big advertising firm called Saatchi & Saatchi in the Middle East in Dubai. And this was back in like 1992. Dubai was nothing. There was nothing out there. So everyone was like, what are you, insane? And he was like, it can't be worse than here.
Yeah.
So we packed us all up and we went over there. And when I say it was nothing, it was fucking nothing. There was a road surrounded by desert, camels literally walking around everywhere. It was nothing. You could see Bedouin tents and stuff still. So it's not like what people think of it now. So that's why we ended up over there. And as such, because I went over there, everyone that sort of came over from England or whatever, whether they were over the years, whether they were a chav back home or a metalhead back home or a raver or a skater kid, when they came to Dubai, you were on your fucking own. So you became friends with everyone. And so it didn't matter if you were a metalhead or a skater or a chav or whatever, you were all friends. And so you kind of all listened to each other's music, which was really nice. But it often maybe found it hard to find your identity growing up. So for me, I remember vividly, we were doing art class. We were in art. I don't remember what year I was in. I think it was year seven, first year of secondary school. And our art teacher at the time used to encourage us every week. We'd have art twice a week. And each time he would let someone else, he'd go, okay, next lesson's your turn to bring in music that you want to listen to and share with the class. And I even remember the kid, because it had such an impact on me. His name was Tom Evely. He bought in a Metallica record and he put it on. I was like, whoa, this is unreal. Like, this is so fucking good. And I didn't know what record he bought in. I didn't know what album it was or what I'd listened to. So I went home and I used to get pocket money, weekly allowance, and it was exactly the price of a CD at the time. And so I used to go to Virgin megastores, because they were still about, every week, and I'd buy a Metallica album until I could find that song that he had played during the art class. And I finally found it, and it was Fade to Black on the Ride the Lightning album. And I was like, this is it. But through doing that and buying all these albums, I never really listened to them properly because I was so desperate to find that song. Sure. And then through doing that, that was when my real love for like rock really, really, really began. And I kind of pushed that stuff aside and went to more, because to find rock music, I would rely on bands, on magazines at the time, like Kerrang and stuff. And they used to come with a CD on the front, Kerrang did. And Metallica was never on those CDs, and Nirvana, all these classic rock bands I ended up loving. But it was bands like Slipknot and Avenged Sevenfold. And so that was when I really got into rock and metal, really. It was the new metal era for me. And then I traveled back into Metallica and stuff. But it was Metallica from the get-go, yeah.
Shout out, Tom.
Yeah, thanks, Tom Evely.
Track four, the first track you remember buying from a record store?
I think so. For me, growing up, obviously you're given, or I was anyway, because I love music. Every Christmas or birthday or any occasion, I would get a present. It would definitely be gifts of music from my family, CDs that I might have said I wanted or what have you. But the first one I bought with my pocket money, before I was introduced to Metallica and all this stuff, it was when we went back to England for a summer holiday, BBC Radio 1 were playing Blink-182 all the time. I can't remember what song it was. There was a song, it was probably All the Small Things, always on the radio, and I loved it. And when I was old enough to go into a record store by myself, I bought Enema of the State, and it was a cassette tape too. It wasn't even a CD. I couldn't afford a CD. It was Blink-182's Enema of the State. And again, I think it was because BBC Radio 1 was playing All the Small Things just on repeat, I think.
And you can see why that and What's My Age Again and things like that would appeal to teenage kids. Do you know what I mean? It's just hook-laden, isn't it? It's just perfect pop, and it's got a nice kind of punk edge to it as well. It's like it's tailor-made for kind of,
that's exactly it. So you're not listening to pop music like your mum would be, so it's not embarrassing because there's an electric guitar in there and there's a real drum player. But essentially, yeah, it was pop music,
yeah,
the disguise on,
absolutely. And it's so weird, like you can play any track off of that record now still in my club and people still lose their shit to it.
That's the nostalgic factor, I think.
Absolutely. But then pop music, you know, people will, you know, right the way back from, you know, if you go back to Twist and Shout and the Beatles and things like that, right the way back, like pop music, like good pop music will stand the test of time. First chorus, mid, late chorus, done. If it's hook laden and it's catchy, it's going to test it. stand the test of time. Absolutely. Absolutely. For track five, I want to know about a song that soundtracked your year's clubbing. So, I've had this answer, and I've had this answer from a few.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
People previously, you never went clubbing.
No.
Okay, right. Let's switch it up. So what was it? Was it bars?
You know, straight again, probably because I grew up in Dubai, I was never really much of a drinker.
Of course.
I didn't drink all that much. You could drink in Dubai, but it was 21, not like in England where you just got to see over the bar. So when I moved back to England at 16, all my mates and everyone in Erskine at that time, James and Cal and that, they were clubbing and they were really going to town. And I had no idea what any of this was. And I felt like to fit in with them, I started drinking and I started smoking cigarettes and stuff. I didn't really like it, but they would go clubbing and I went with them a few times, I guess in York is where we were.
Was that commercial clubbing, like raving clubbing, or was that going to Fibbers for like an alternative night or?
So you would go to Fibbers for an alternative night and I'd enjoy all that part of it. But then you'd always end up somewhere like some place called Willow where it was just raving and just, all the chavs are in there, and I was like, "What the fuck am I doing in here?"
Yeah.
The only like song I can remember from that era that they of dance and EDM and all that stuff. So there was a song, I can't remember what it's called. It was a song by Chase and Status, and I liked it because it started with an acoustic guitar. It was like it kind of reminded me of Toto.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, I could get down on this." And so that was about as far as my life of clubbing ever went. It wasn't really for me.
Okay, I'm going to switch it up there. I'm going to throw in a bonus question. First gig you went to?
Oh, just as a fan?
Yeah.
I think, honestly, the first show I ever went to, and the lines are blurred here because I was so young, but it was either, it was either the Scorpions that my stepdad took me to in Dubai, or, and I can't remember which one came first, or I went to see, funnily enough, the Rasmus in Dubai when I was a little kid. I can't remember which one came first. I think it was the Scorpions. But there was a festival in Dubai called the Dubai Desert Rock Festival that came about in my sort of preteen years. They started really introducing rock bands. And the first ever year I remember it was Limp Bizkit and the Rasmus. And Limp Bizkit cancelled and they blamed terrorist threats, which not a thing in Dubai. And everyone living there was like, oh, that's such an easy excuse for the American band to use to not come to the Middle East. But the Rasmus still came. And I remember, I didn't really know who the Rasmus was. They had that one song in the shadows. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is whatever. But because Limp Bizkit cancelled, the Rasmus came out again and played a second set. And they became like heroes, and I ended up having the best time ever. So that may have been my first show, or it was Scorpions, but that one is the one that sticks out in my mind as my first show, just because I didn't have my parents with me. I was in a big pit full of rock fans and metalheads, and somehow we all managed to bop along to the Rasmus, and they became the heroes of the year.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. Track six. I've read the answer. I think you've done what 99% of the guests have done. I always send this question over and ask for a favourite song from an artist from your home county, but everyone at this point goes, oh, I thought you said country.
I thought you said country too.
Yeah.
Oh, you did say county.
I need to put county in massive, like, bold letters, because you're literally one of about 150 people that have done it on this podcast. So don't feel too ashamed, Ben. So that's fine. I mean, for somebody that's so well-travelled and has lived in so many places, I think country is fine for you. I think we can...
I don't know what bands are from my home county.
What's your home county? What do you call home county?
Well, I'm from Wandsworth originally. That's where I'm from. So I don't know. I don't even know what county that is. All I know is my local team, I think, was Crystal Palace.
Well, that's London, right?
It is London, South London.
Yeah, I mean, you got enough to pick from London, but
from London, yeah.
I won't put you on the spot. We go country. You know, for somebody that grew up in Dubai and is living in the States, we're all right. We go with the UK. So
give me a pass, a country pass.
Absolutely, mate. What are you going to go for?
I picked Blackbird by the Beatles. I think the Beatles have obviously too many amazing songs to sort of count. And, you know, you say Beatles and you think Hey Jude, or even probably Yellow Submarine, or there's loads of fucking massive songs that you think. But for me, Blackbird is, I don't know why, but there's just something about the chord progression in that song and the simplicity of it. Just the finger picked acoustic guitar and the vocals. That just resonates with me to such a level. I adore it. And I think it's the first song that I was ever brave enough to sort of sing and record myself singing too. So maybe that's why it holds a bit of a soft spot in my heart. But I mean, it's one of the best songs of all time, in my opinion.
It's an absolute masterpiece. And I often, you know, when people talk Beatles and you look at bands, career spans and how long they exist for, and you look at, you know, the Beatles, how, you know, in the short space of time that they existed,
barely a band. It's insane,
fucking crazy. And you just think, how many years was that from Mr. Postman to Tomorrow Never Knows? What, like, how did that happen?
It's insane. They were barely a fucking band. It's like, it takes most bands longer to get signed than to completely become the biggest sensation there ever has and probably ever will be.
Yeah.
And then they just went, nah, fuck it. Oh, all right.
But I mean, a little bit of me thinks good, because they didn't put a duffer out. You know, it was just all perfect, in my opinion.
It's kind of like, this is just a really strange thing to compare it to, but for me, it was kind of like the TV show Friends. I know a lot of people are going, oh, fucking Friends, I hate it. But I think Friends was such a great show, and, or better example for England, anything Ricky Gervais has ever done.
Okay.
Because he ends it when it needs to end. He doesn't do what a lot of sitcoms or television shows or movie franchises do, which is bleed the rock dry. It's like, oh, well, we could get some more money from this. We could do it for a little bit longer, and it declines. Ricky Gervais is the perfect example of that. He's here, and it's like, this is fucking phenomenal. And he ends it whilst it's still fucking phenomenal. That's exactly what the Beatles did. They were phenomenal from day one to the end. And I think they ended it with a rooftop show London. It wasn't even a gargantuan show that they put on Say Goodbye. Yeah. They fucking just lugged their gear up to the roof and played it. Didn't tell anyone. Pissed off. Amazing.
I was listening to an interview with McCartney the other day with Adam Buxton, and you could hear that Buxton was like really nervous. You know, he spoke to some real heavyweight guests, but this is a Beatle, you know, like, that's just different level, right? And McCartney was wonderful, like super gracious, really interesting. And he said, like, so what's a, like, you know, in lockdown, like, what's Paul McCartney do? And he was just like, oh, you know, I sometimes play the guitar a little bit. But he said, you know, I really like watching Holmes Under the Hammer. And I just thought, fucking brilliant. I just love the fact that he's just sitting there. Oh, right, he does what normal people do. That's mental. Like, I thought he'd be doing something, you know, completely different. It's Paul McCartney, but now just sits there with his feet up watching Holmes Under the Hammer.
Probably not even dressed, still in his PJs. Cold cup of tea, didn't finish it. Legend.
Oh, amazing. Right, last track. So, Ben, this is your opportunity to play tastemaker and an influencer and turn someone onto something that they possibly haven't heard before. So for track 7, it's a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear, please.
Super easy for me. It was Gary Moore, Still Got the Blues. I think primarily, obviously, blues music is a black culture that came from the States, and it came from such a time that, I mean, of course, the music is just so emotional and laden. And for me, it's so hard to find white blues artists that really fly that flag, and I think do the genre of music proud. You know, I think, again, it's, people will disagree with me here, but I think Eric Clapton's one of those people. Mm-hmm. I think he's phenomenal. I love Eric Clapton. But for me, Gary Moore really is the one. He did what I think blues music should and always has done for me, real blues music, which is, in its simplest form, in such a basic way, there's no trickery, there's nothing. What it is what it is. It moves you to such a degree that other genres, really, they need a lot in there to get you to that point. Blues music was just like, no, it's done it with very, very little. And Gary Moore, to me, he does that with his guitar. Like, he'll play a note and somehow he's managed to say what it would take an entire song for most people to say with that one note, the way he's played it, the tone he's got from his guitar. Still Got the Blues, for me, just had such a huge impact on me, not only as a guitar player, but as a music fan, blues and rock. And I just think not enough people, I wonder how many people that watch this will even have ever heard of it. Hopefully they go and listen to it. But it's an incredible song. It's a beautiful song. He was always one of my favorites. And actually, he died, I was staying next door to him in a hotel. I think I was in Spain or somewhere. I think it was Spain. Or maybe it was Argentina. I can't remember, but I was young and he was staying in the hotel next to me. And I found out and I was like, oh, Gary Moore's over there. And my bandmates were like, go knock on the door. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And he died that night. I often think, fuck, if I'd have knocked on his door, maybe would he not have died? I don't fucking know. But yeah, it's just crazy how from such a young age, he had such a huge impact on me. And then I was there next to him when I was on tour, and that our paths could have crossed.
Oh, potentially. Man. And what a, you know, legacy he's left behind. Even, you know, obviously Thin Lizzy, let's not overlook, you know, he's playing in Thin Lizzy as well. Like, legit legend.
He is. He's unbelievable. He's if I had to pick an all-time favourite guitarist, I think it would be him.
Okay. Well, we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast, Ben, so people can go and listen to Gary Moore and all the other tracks that you've picked on there.
It's going to be an odd list.
It will be. It will be all over the place, but that's how we like it. We'll obviously put some of your material on there as well. So, speaking of which, as 2021 is opening up to be a much more exciting and connected and happier place than maybe the beginning of 2021, what are you looking forward to personally, and what's going to be happening professionally?
Personally, I've not fucking seen my mum or my dad or my sister in like 2 years now. America's not letting Brits in. So I've had one of my children was born in 2020. My mum's never met him. He's 16 months old now. And we're about to have another baby this next week that my mum won't have met either. So I'll have had two kids, my mum and dad and sister and stepdad. They haven't met. So,
oh, that's harsh, man.
It's brutal, man. It's really brutal. So personally, that's what I'm looking forward to. I need to see my family. I just don't know how. Obviously, I could fly home, but my wife's so pregnant, she can't. And during COVID, putting four young children on an airplane seems a little bit irresponsible.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of just waiting for the transatlantic corridor to open back up so my parents can come out here. So personally, that's really all I'm looking forward to, seeing my mom again, giving her a hug. And then professionally, same thing, really. Travel, like, get me the fuck out of here. I want to get back to England and Europe. And that's one of my favorite things to do, is tour, especially like Europe. You wake up, and in America, it's very samey. You wake up and you're in a venue and it's ugh. In Europe, for some reason, it's just so inviting to get out your bus and go for a stroll and sit in a coffee shop and have a coffee. And it's just different. So that's what I'm looking forward to professionally, is getting back out on tour just to travel.
Wonderful. And if people want to keep up to speed with tour dates, releases and everything, where's the best place to follow what you're up to, Ben?
It's a very good question. I'm assuming we have a website called askinalexandria.com, but I can't tell you the last time I checked.
I'll have a look and I'll put it in the bio of this episode, if it exists.
If it exists, I'm sure it does.
Have you heard of social media? That's catching on. Yes, social media. There's one called Instagram. There's one called Facebook. Get involved, mate. It's going to be big.
They're like clubs that you just go and hang out, like a book club.
Like that. But sort of like that, but you just post pictures of your dinner and stuff like that.
Oh, fuck yeah, foodie club.
Get involved, mate. Get one for the band as well.
I'll check it out.
Ben, it's been a joy talking records with you, mate. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, mate. I had a blast, man. Thank you.
Oh, wicked. Thank you very much. There you go. What a lovely chat. What a top man. What an interesting life, you know? Oh, man, when he was saying that his dad's bike got stolen and it just broke him, and he was like, no, we're going, we're getting out. We're going to go to Dubai. No one was going to Dubai then. I love that. You know, what a beautiful story and you know, massively life-changing for all involved. And then relocates to the States and has a wonderful family and another one joining very, very soon. So, as mentioned just before we wrapped it up, best of luck, man. Best of luck. Lovely episode. Really enjoyed that. Hope you really enjoyed it too. Why not go check out the back catalogue now and just subscribe, and then that way you won't miss any future episodes. They'll just pop up on your listening device without having to worry about anything. If you want to support us, do it over on Patreon. Other than that, go old school and just nudge your mate and go, you heard Off the Beaten Track podcast. It's all right, that. Do that. That's always good. Or just follow us on the socials and give us a little like, love, share, retweet. Subscribe on whatever platform you listen to your podcasts on. Drop us a comment on the socials. Drop me a message. Just say you lisp too much or you bang on about your club too much. Or just tell me what you like about the podcast or what you'd like to hear or who you'd like to hear me chat to. Get involved. You know, I'm an open book. Let's have a natter. I'll see you next time. Have a lovely week. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.